Hey, welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We are online all the darn time, npr.org/Bryant Park. Time to check in on the stories that are clogging up the worldwide series of tubes. We've gathered our producers in the studio to talk about the most emailed, most popular, most viewed stories on the internet. You did it. This is the most. Caitlin Kenny.
All right. My story is the most popular on the Boston Globe. It's about colleges scrambling to offer curriculum on the Mormon religion. Apparently, there's been a renewed interest, and Harvard Divinity School is offering its first course on Mormonism this semester. Also, two non-Mormon universities besides Harvard, Claremont Graduate University in California and Utah State College, have taken the first step in endowing chairs in Mormon studies, and the University of Wyoming is considering following suit. Of course, you know, we know the presidential run of Mitt Romney brought renewed attention to the religion. It's also increasingly been depicted on stage and screen. Tony Kushner's Pulitzer Prize-winning Angels in America, to the HBO series Big Love, and last year's PBS documentary The Mormons. So apparently a lot of people are interested in studying the religion, and the fact is Brigham Young University just can't hold them all. The Mormon religion today claims about 13 million members of the church.
So. And it's the largest indigenous American religion.
But why didn't they do it in Boston when he was governor? Just wondering.
Yeah. Good question. Well, they said the reason it hasn't really been studied in the past is that it isn't that old. It's only about 178 years old. And also because there were fears in the religion that studying it would bring also more criticism. But now they've sort of opened themselves up and they want to be more transparent, so they're inviting people to learn about their religion.
All right. We go to Dan and across the pond for the next most.
Hey, guys. We got most emailed from the International Herald Tribune. In Diana Inquest, a conspiracy theory with new twists. It's 5 months into the Princess Diana Inquest and more than 10 years since her death, but yesterday was the big day that people have been waiting for. Muhammad Al-Fayed, father of Dodi,
yes,
boyfriend to Princess Di, had his testimony before the inquest and repeated in great terms with a lot of fanfare the conspiracy theory that he has alleged for quite some time, that Princess Di and Dodi were killed basically at the behest of Prince Philip, Queen Elizabeth's husband, and the plot was executed by the British and French secret intelligence services with help from the CIA. He added a new allegation yesterday, which is that Prince Charles was also involved and that he had participated in the plots so that he could marry his, quote, crocodile wife, the former Camilla Parker Bowles.
Shouldn't laugh at that.
Now, we should add...
Crocodile.
Yes.
He said that in the court proceedings?
Yes. We should add that there's substantial evidence to the contrary.
And she's not a crocodile.
There's evidence of that as well, yes. There's a lot more evidence that says that the accident was caused by the fact that the guy was driving way too fast and was drinking. But what I found most interesting about this article, we've heard this conspiracy theory before. I didn't realize that basically this inquest has been years in the making and only really came to be in the public because of Muhammad Al-Fayed. And he has spent millions of pounds fighting in court to get this, to get his day in court, essentially.
It's been a decade, right? Mm-hmm.
Right, and the royal family was fighting just as hard to keep this behind closed doors.
And they own Harrods, correct?
He owns Harrods, which is basically
the soccer team.
Yes, and a soccer team. Maybe he's extraordinarily wealthy. And yesterday was his big day. No word yet on whether the official explanation will be his or the other one.
It's a colorful testimony.
That's right.
Ian, have you been looking at your hometown paper again?
No. This is a common mistake. West Virginia and Virginia. Different
states. Oh, it says Virginia, sorry.
One is to the west of the other.
Yeah.
I've fought this my whole life.
My sister lives in Virginia.
If you want to hear good West Virginia jokes, go to Virginia. this is from the Virginia Gazette. Specifically, the headline, Sidewalks to Nowhere, Mandates Make Little Sense. And in James City County, there's a county ordinance that says whenever you build a new development, you have to build a sidewalk out front. This is a great way for the city to kind of subsidize sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
Thing is, businesses in James City County, not so close together.
Yeah.
So there's like a rash of sidewalks that are, you know, 100 feet long, 200 feet long, not connected to anything.
So the city doesn't then subsidize the little pieces to connect the sidewalks?
Apparently the idea is that, you know, as, you know, things boom in James City County, it's all going to connect. There will eventually be businesses in between the existing businesses. They will build sidewalks. It's actually, now that I think about it, it sounds a lot. Did you ever play Sim City? And you would build the roads and then they would have to connect?
Yeah.
Anyway, there's also, you can go to a website Sidewalks to Nowhere. Currently, a lot of counties around the country have this problem, and you can look at, if you're so inclined, you can look at pictures of sidewalks that don't go anywhere. It's oddly captivating.
Know what you're doing at work. All right, my most is most popular with BBC and Yahoo, and with a headline like this, why wouldn't you click on it? Ancient frog was as big as bowling ball. Scientists have unearthed a fossil which has been dubbed the devil toad, or Beelzebufo. Beelzebub
to
coming.
To its friends.
Yes. From the Greek word devil, and bufo is Latin for toad. This researcher has been studying these remains that he found in 1993 off the coast of Madagascar. It gets more dramatic. Finally found enough of them to put together this gigantic frog, they believe, dates back 70 million years. They believe this frog may have been so aggressive that it actually took down some dinosaurs' eggs, perhaps.
Wow. I heard the little dinosaurs, too.
Yeah, and that it had wide mouth, jaws, and teeth. The skull bones extremely thick with ridges and grooves characteristic of some type of armor. So, I think we just all be glad that Darwinism took...
We live in a different time.
...took its toll on that. Okay, we're almost done with the most, except we do need to check the NPR most emailed list. Matt
That's
Martinez,
right.
Senior producer.
I have the number 3 most emailed at npr.org, and it's pretty much all about heavy breathing. It's part of the NPR In Character series. Can we just play that all the time?
I love heavy breathers.
It's part of NPR's In Character series, an in-depth look at Darth Vader. And this also proves Dan's theory that anything on Star Wars shoots right up to the most emailed list. It is number 3 right now, and we're going to listen to the report. It's Andrea Shea reporting on Darth Vader In Character. Here we go.
When moviegoers settled into their seats in 1977, we opened the first page of what would ultimately become a 6-part comic book serial on screen. And we loved it. From the earnest princess to the comical droids to the sinister warlord who confronts them.
Several transmissions were beamed to the ship by rebel spies. I want to know what happened to the plans they sent you.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm a member of the Imperial Senate on a diplomatic mission to Alderaan.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor. Take her away!
Ben Burtt is the sound designer for the Star Wars movies, and to get Vader's mechanical breathing, Burtt went to a California dive shop, jammed a small microphone into a scuba regulator, and started sucking air.
When you breathe through it, you could hear the valve opening and closing. It had a little bit of a click and clank to it. And the flow of air through the narrow rubber hoses had a really cold, very hissy quality to it. It was unreal.
Burtt went on to record heart monitors and other devices for Vader's life support system. Then he played the sounds for Lucas.
It was kind of funny. Vader sounded like a walking emergency room with everything going all at once, you know, clicking, breathing, heart thumping, and all of this sound. So we began stripping those sounds away one at a time.
They settled on just the breathing.
You know, I thought a little bit about Vader as being sort of like the crocodile in the Peter Pan stories. The crocodile would swallow the alarm clock. And that every time the crocodile was around, or in this case, Vader, there'd be some special sound associated with him, even when he wasn't talking, that would give an indication that he was present or lurking about, and he was dangerous.
Vader's sonic threat was amplified by music composed by John Williams, the same man who created the scary theme for the shark in Jaws. The music introduces and defines the character, says Dan Carlin, head of the film score department at Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Sometimes you don't see the bad guy, as in the shark, and you just hear it, and that tells you, oh my God, that's somewhere. I can't see where it is, but I'm scared because I hear the music, so that shark must be close. And the same thing with Darth Vader.
Nobody's safe when Vader's around.
That's David Prowse, the 6'7" stunt double and bodybuilder beneath Vader's costume in the first three Star Wars films. Size contributes to Vader's power as a villain. When George Lucas first called Prowse, he offered Prowse the choice of two parts. The first was Han Solo's furry sidekick Chewbacca, but Prowse chose the villain.
He said, well, tell me why. Why did you choose the villain? I said, well, if you think back on all the movies that you've ever seen, where there are goodies and baddies, I said, you always remember the baddie. I said, Dave, he said, I think you've made a very wise decision, he said, because nobody will ever forget Darth Vader.
I've been waiting for you, Obi-Wan. We meet again at last. The circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
Only a master of evil, Darth.
While Darth Vader's sound and size are instantly scary, much of his menace comes from the fact that we don't really know who or what he is, says Boston psychoanalyst Stephen Cooper. He says Vader's mask is key.
Usually when there's a mask, you can develop a theory about why it's there. It's covering up something hideous, or it's to be anonymous. But part of what's interesting about this visage is that you have no idea what the mask is about.
Part of what the seemingly all-powerful villain is hiding begins to be revealed in the second film, The Empire Strikes Back.
Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
He told me enough. He told me you killed him.
No, I am your father.
With that, Vader is not only villain, but daddy. The name Vader is Dutch for father. Psychoanalyst Stephen Cooper says all of a sudden a character that started as an archetypal bad guy becomes more complex.
I think the turning point about being a daddy is that he seems like he kind of loves his son. He does seem to have conflict when they're fighting.
In the end, Cooper says Vader acts as any father would. He sacrifices his own life to save his son.
Luke, help me take this mask off.
But you'll die.
Nothing can stop that now. Just for once, let me look on you with my own eyes.
Darth Vader becomes tragic, one of the requisites for any successful villain. And his creator George Lucas apparently wanted audiences to see just how tragic, because he devoted the three Star Wars prequels that were made after the original trilogy to Darth Vader's childhood and the brutal trauma that turned him from a Jedi Knight into the Dark Lord.
That's Andrea Shea of member station WBUR, part of NPR's In Character series, and one of the most emailed stories right now at npr.org.